Did you know that your gut is directly connected to your brain and can contribute to anxiety, stress, and depression, which, by the way, can also impact your sexual health? So here's my secret weapon for gut health, Just Thrive Probiotic. Now listen up. Just Thrive isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is the only one that survives your stomach acid and reaches your gut 100% alive. All those others, the ones that come in fancy drinks or you gotta refrigerate, nope, that's not even a thing. This is the one. I've noticed significant changes to my overall health. Like, this might be TMI, but I'm way more regular and my skin is glowing. Think of Just Thrive like your personal gut gardener. It maintains the health of your gut by weeding out the bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and then replenishes the good, making it a total game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, even your mood and sexual health. And if you want to check out my episode with Just Thrive's founder, Tina Anderson, we talk all about how gut bacteria plays a crucial role in your overall happiness, including your sex life. Because a healthy, balanced gut means less stress and more energy. So if you want to check it out, I'm offering a deal for my listeners. You can save 20% off site-wide at justthrivehealth.com with the promo code SEXWITHEMILY. That's 20% off on the probiotic that's truly changing lives and making waves in the wellness community. Everyone's talking about it. Don't just take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Go to justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code SEXWITHEMILY for 20% off. Imagine a toy so iconic it practically wrote the playbook for pleasure. Allow me to introduce or reintroduce you to the Magic Wand, aka the Cadillac of Vibrators. The Magic Wand Original is a trusted companion in the journey of joy, whether it's your first time chasing an orgasm or you're looking to give your partner a spine-tingling erotic massage. The Magic Wand should be your go-to with powerful rumbles and several different rhythms and patterns. It's no wonder the Magic Wand has scooped up accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I'm so enamored with mine, I've customized my bedside table just to keep it within arm's reach at all times. But the magic doesn't stop with the original Magic Wand. The Magic Wand family has grown over the years, offering a variety of models to suit every lifestyle. Go cord-free with the Magic Wand Rechargeable. Embrace compact power without compromising intensity with the Magic Wand Mini. I love this mini. Or the Micro, which is just teeny tiny and really powerful. Or enjoy a range of sensations with the Magic Wand Plus. Each model delivers the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original a legend. So are you ready to experience the magic? Visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to enchant pleasure seekers around the globe. That's sexwithemily.com/magicwand. Magic Wand, more than just a vibrator. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. On today's show, I'm joined by Hannah Cranson to talk about our new podcast, Too Much to Handle. Topics include how to own your sexuality as a woman, ways to not let societal views influence how you date, mate, and live your life, how to make sure your pleasure is a priority in a relationship, and tips that will help you date more efficiently for the best results. All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Look into his eyes. Eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily, you got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's got to have her standards. Oh, my.
Do women know about shrinkage?
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, check out sexwithemily.com and all the amazing things we have going on there to help you have better sex. We love when you review us and find the show wherever you listen to podcasts. iTunes is great. That helps a lot. But also, you guys, if you haven't checked this out yet, I am right now on Monday through Friday. I have a daily show on SiriusXM from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 10 Eastern on channel Stars 109. You guys, I have to tell you, it has been a dream because people, you can call in, we can talk, answer your sex relationship questions, kind of like what we do here on the call shows, but now it is literally 10 hours a week. So if you check out our site, we do have a place where you can get a free 30-day trial if you don't have SiriusXM. A lot of cars come with it now. So anyway, it's been a blast. But for many of you who have been concerned, the podcast is not going anywhere. We're still going to do the podcast. And as always, you can find me at all social media at Sex with Emily across the board.
I'm so excited to get into my guest, Hannah Cranston. She's been on the show. I think this is her third time on the show.
Yeah.
You might have to give
third
you a
third time's
little,
a charm.
Third time's a charm. How many sex toys are you going to leave with this time? I think if you're on three times, you get like a Sibian or something. Hannah Cranston. Hannah Cranston is host and content creator, and she just launched her new podcast, Too Much to Handle.
Which you're on.
I'm on. I just recorded an episode. We're doing a marathon today, and I just love Hannah. I was like, I knew. I'm like, you should have a podcast, and now she does. It's a show for every woman who's ever been told that she's just too much. They're having the conversations you're already having behind closed doors, and we just had a really great conversation. Our Instagram's at Hannah Cranston, and the other episodes, if you want to go back, that she was on Sex with Emily was Turns On and Turn Offs, and the next episode was The Real Deal with Dating. Hi, Hannah.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How's it going? Tell me about, so you're doing the podcast.
Yes.
How does it feel? What do you love about it?
So great. It feels like, you know, when you do something and it just feels right, like you're doing what you're meant to be doing. That is how it feels for me, because I'm talking about the things that me and my friends are talking about on our own, and I'm just kind of getting into it, but I'm providing a lot of history, a lot of context, a lot of statistics, because a lot of things that we face as women are a little taboo and we don't talk about them in public, but a lot of women are facing it, so might as well talk about it.
Well, let's talk about some of those things.
Yeah.
So let's talk about when you got this show and you started thinking about it, what are those things in particular that, like, I'm so excited to have a platform to really talk about this?
Yeah, actually, the way that I started the podcast was talking about what we talked about today is, you know, are you still a feminist if you like to be dominated in bed, and how do you really reconcile that? That was one of the main topics that I wanted to get into, because I do think that is something that so many of my friends have dealt with and have expressed. And so I was really excited to obviously break that down with you.
That was really fun.
Yeah. And another one is that we did last week, which I was really excited to talk about, was, is body positivity only for plus size women? Because the body positivity movement really just encompasses women who are larger, and, you know, thin shaming happens, fat shaming happens, yes, but how do we sort of figure out whether thinner women who are thin shamed can be part of that movement too?
What do you tell women then who are feeling that? Do you talk about how to have that confidence too for women and how to feel really good about it? Did you guys talk about that?
Yeah, we talk a lot about that, and like feeling good in your body regardless of like the size or the shape or whatever it may be. I think what we really look at is, okay, why is this shaming happen? Like, where does this come from? And I think understanding like where things come from and like why you think the way you do, like looking at things with a critical eye, like you talked about on our episode about, you know, feeling wanting to be dominated, can really be helpful in overcoming any sort of like shame or insecurities that you may have, because then you can see, oh wait, this is why I feel the way that I do, or this is why I'm receiving the negative backlash that I'm receiving. And then you can kind of be like, well, where do I feel authentically? What do I, you know,
what do I, where, I get to decide,
yeah,
right? Because, well, I think it's so interesting, because I mean I'd love to actually go in and kind of talk about what we just talked about, because it's almost like not that it would be repetitive, but like a recap, because for me, or it's a different angle. It was so interesting because I didn't grow up thinking like the things that I was doing wrong sexually. Mm-hmm. I just thought that like I wasn't really sure what I was doing, and I knew I wasn't having a lot of pleasure. So I want to get into that in a second. But what's so interesting is that I think that what we're talking about is that a lot of us are raised with these certain beliefs from our parents, from society, from the, you know, religion, from our friends. And then there comes a point when you become like a young adult, let's say in your early 20s, you go away to college, that you have to stop. And some people, I think this is where the problems come in. If you don't do this, you need to take time and go, okay, stop in my tracks. This is what I've been told. What do I believe?
Yeah.
Like, maybe my parents thought it was wrong for me to have premarital sex or to, I don't know what, to like, whatever it is, get blowjobs, you know, like to watch porn. But we get to decide when you're an adult what works for you. And that can be really like, it can be very inspiring for a lot of people to realize, oh, I have a choice. Those voices in my head are my mom's. They're not mine.
But it's so hard.
It's so hard.
Because your mom's voice becomes part of your belief
it
system.
It does.
It does. And so I'll give an example. Like, even last night when I told my mom I was going to be talking about sex, I think she had like trepidation about it. And that transferred to me. I felt that projection, and I encompassed. I was like, wait, maybe I shouldn't be talking about sex. Maybe I shouldn't. Da, da, da. And I like had to take a step back and be like, no, I know myself. I know the impact that I want to have and what I want to do, and freeing women to feel confident in themselves. And so, yes, like sex is a huge part of that, right? Yeah. And I don't want to perpetuate that shame by not discussing it or like skirting around the issue.
Right. And your mom's coming at it from like, oh my God, my little Hannah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, I don't fault her at all. Like, she's a product of her upbringing and all of that.
Well, that's the difference that we have to realize. Like, our parents come, many parents, with the best intentions to protect her little girl. But what you're doing, though, is by having the conversation that we just had on your show, which everyone should check out, is that so many people are going to be like, oh, I guess I can have enjoyable sex now and still be, you know, submissive in the bedroom. So I think it's a service, and that's something that your mom, maybe she'll listen to it and she'll get that. And how great would that be that you, maybe she won't, maybe you'll hide it from her, who knows, baby steps. But I think that's interesting. So after our conversation, though, because this is something we haven't talked about, at least not in a while, on the podcast, about a lot of women feeling that, maybe we can talk about that when we're having sex, that we don't feel like, that it's hard to ask for what we want or to be dominated because we don't feel like we're a feminist. And you're saying a lot of your friends felt that as well. They felt guilt.
Yeah, they felt a lot of guilt in maybe wanting to be like spanked or something like that, or choked. They felt like, or any sort of like rough sex. I mean, for me personally, like that's not really my thing. But even just like wanting to be on bottom, I almost felt was like anti-feminist, because I was like, oh, I should want to be in control and I'll be on top and I'll, you know, make sure I get mine first, you know, and that's not what I find is enjoyable. Just like, that's how the cookie crumbles.
Right.
And so I think like being able to reconcile, like, no, I can still be a feminist. I'm almost more of a feminist because I'm seeking out what I enjoy and not letting society like determine what I'm allowed to or not allowed to enjoy.
Right. We all get to decide. That's true. So I thought that was very helpful. Yeah. So what about these topics? So I'm thinking about, let's talk about being too much to handle, because I think that I understand in the sense of, you know, dating, I've always been that woman like, oh God, Emily's a lot. She's a handful. Or like, I love Emily, but there's just a lot of energy when Emily comes over. You know, even guys, like, they love that about me, but it can also be like, whoa,
intimidating.
Too much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is that kind of go back to the like, women are intimidating, or men don't want to be with a strong woman? Is that kind of part of the origin of the title and what you were thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was always told that I was like, quote unquote, too much to handle. And I think I was told like I was too loud, I was too opinionated, I was too needy. And I was just like too much. And I think a lot of women are also told that their bodies are too much, which I don't even understand how that's a thing. And as I've gotten older, I felt a lot of shame around that, right? And
around
I wanted
being too
to,
much. You tried to make yourself much. Smaller.
Yeah, I tried to make myself smaller, both physically and emotionally, and the way that I interacted in the world. And then as I got older, I realized that those qualities are flipping awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
And that we should celebrate that in ourselves and in others. And that's kind of what the podcast is about. Like, we really get into some of the things where like my first podcast was about slutty Halloween costumes, right? Like, you can still wear a slutty Halloween costume. You can wear a slutty outfit whenever you want. And that doesn't say anything about your sexual promiscuity or your efficacy in the workplace or anything. It doesn't say anything about you except for the fact that you decided you wanted to wear a slutty Halloween costume.
Right.
But I think we judge women and we judge ourselves so much.
Yeah. We're our worst critics.
Yeah, exactly. And women infighting is a big issue too. Like, we judge each other because, you know, we feel repressed in certain ways. And so we want to be like, if another woman looks really free or liberated, sometimes we're jealous of
we're
that.
Yeah, we're jealous.
And so we, you know, get angry at each other, and it's just bullshit. I think I'm allowed to say that on your show.
Of course. Okay, yeah. The more you step into who you are and that power. So do you feel like, even by having this show, that you feel like you are stepping into it? Does it feel good now? Like, you're too much to handle, and it's like, it's great. Like, you feel more like you see how it's your strength. It sounds like you're saying, it really is.
I love it so much. I'm excited to record it every week, and I like get giddy about it. And I like my poor boyfriend, because we were like driving in the car. We were on a road trip this past weekend, and I was like, did you know? Let me just tell you about this statistic about like feminism and this like human sexuality and da 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 da. Like, I just get so excited about it, because it's not as mainstream to talk about these things.
Right.
And it does feel like so liberating to get it out and be like, okay, no, like, F this. I'm going to talk about things that we're like, quote unquote, not supposed to talk about.
Right.
but so, that so many women are thinking about.
Exactly. Well, I think that you give them through this and through what we both do is that we're giving women permission to take up space. Because I think that women do try to be small we in every space. We don't take the space up that we need to because we feel bad. We're pleasers. Mm-hmm. We feel like, you know, our needs come last and that we're so concerned what other people think. And so once you get to that place where you're like, I can still take up space, be strong, be smart, and be powerful, and still have concern for others. Like, I don't have to be a total bitch and be steamrolling everyone. I can still be a woman who has a lot of power, a lot of influence, and takes up a hell of a lot of space and still spread a lot more love. Like, I just feel like the more you get into yourself as a woman, the more, like, it you know, helps the world. So what kind of feedback have you been getting from your show so far?
The feedback's been really great. I mean, my favorite thing in the entire world is when teenage girls message me and DM me that I've, like, informed their feminist ideology. Like, I could just die a happy woman. Like, that is all I need in life. But some of the feedback actually has been from men saying that, like, conversations around feminism can be really intimidating and they can be really excluding towards men. And so a lot of men are saying that it's more approachable for them. And I love that.
I love that too.
Because, like, we can, like, I always say, like, we can preach to the choir all we want, but we do need men on our side to achieve equality. And so I love that men are, like, super into the show too and are digging it. So that's
been to be inclusive.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's how I've always felt about my show too. I've never said on this show, and I think, you know, my longtime listeners will know that I'm never about, like, well, you know, men, they're just jerks or they're assholes. Because I don't believe it. I don't believe all women are crazy, which was, like, that was one of your first podcasts. None of that's true. And so I'd be like, the more inclusive we are, because there's so much hate out there and there's so much judgments we all do to ourselves and others, that the more we can try to find these unifying factors to bring people together. So I love that it's feminist, but it's, you know, it's for men and for women. So I think that's...
And for gender non-binary.
Everyone. For everybody. For everybody. So what about like all this with social media and how do you think that is impacting, you know, you grew up with it, let's say, like, how do you think that's impacting everything that we're doing now and being like a feminist, like even posting a hot photo, but then still being saying something, you know, having a message, like, what do you still think that there's part of it that's like you always have to look perfect and look great on social, but yet you still... You know, how do we deal with that? Because we're so all attached to our phones right now. I'm just sort of obsessed with not being attached to my phone, though I still am. And I don't know how to reconcile that
because we need
it for the business. No, I haven't done it yet. But I see the concerns around trying to leave it outside the bedroom at night and stuff. Yeah. So
I think it's really hard, right? I think that you, when you put yourself out there, whether you have like a more public personality like you or I do, or if you're just somebody who likes Instagram, like, you know, most of the world, I think it's hard because, you know, the second you post something and make it public, you have eyes on you. And I think that is difficult for a lot of people, especially for women. Right. So my whole thing is, like, I love when women post selfies of themselves where they're just like totally feeling themselves. I personally love posting bikini shots or shots where I think I look attractive, because I think we have to love ourselves more. Yeah. And I don't think enough of us do, like, like ourselves and like the way we look and like the way that we move through this world. And so I think by posting those kind of photos, you can almost, like, sometimes fake it till you make it. You know?
What do you mean? Like, so you post it, you're like, I feel hot, but what if...
Let's say I'm feeling insecure. So most of the time, I'm a pretty confident woman.
Right.
I don't know if you could tell, but I'm a pretty confident woman. But there are times when I don't feel super confident, but I'll, like, be like, oh, like, this is an attractive, like, selfie. I feel good about this selfie. So I'll post that, and, like, showing the world that I'm confident almost makes me feel more confident.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you're just presenting as confident, and then I feel more confident in that because I'm putting that face forward.
I see. Yeah.
But I have,
I see
you
the
know,
feedback. I see that.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing as, like, I'll give myself, like, pep talks before going into a meeting or before doing a show or something like that, where I'm like telling
you
myself,
got this.
You go,
well,
girl.
That's so important. I think, like, affirmations, like, I have notes in my house. Like, sometimes that, like, I change them out. Like, that just say things to me that remind me of things. It's important. The more we can affirm and then surround ourselves by really good people. Have you gone through this phase yet? Do you have friends? Because women talk a lot about, and I guess I don't have this out. I'm so averse to negativity or toxicity or friends who are jealous or have, I don't know. I just don't have those people in my life. Like, I literally can spot it. But I feel like What do you do about that when you have friends who are looking at your success you've known for a while and they have jealousy, or they might even try to do things that sabotage you? Have you ever had any of that? And what do you do? How do you handle that?
Yeah, I'm pretty similar to you. I really try to stay away from negative people. I had a friend who I was really, really close with, and she told me that she thought my Instagram was annoying. And I understand where she was coming from it, because I do think, of course, there's a difference in what I put on Instagram and who I am in real life. Right. Like, spoiler alert, Instagram is not reality. Right. Hate to break it to you.
Exactly.
But, you know, Instagram is part of my career.
Right, we all need to do it, right?
Yeah, right. And so when she said that, it felt like an assault. Whereas, like, a stranger, a troll could tell me, like, they hate my Instagram. Okay, like, F off. Like,
right.
You know, I don't
really
care.
She's your friend.
But this is my friend. This is somebody in my real life. This is somebody in my circle who I've allowed in my circle. And to have that felt like she was disparaging my career. Whereas, like, yeah. I don't go into your, like, accounting office and tell you you're doing your Excel sheet wrong.
Right.
Or your Excel sheet's annoying.
She's right.
You know, like, I don't, like, so it's, right. I don't think people, because it's so public, see that there's a parallel there. And so I honestly,
yeah,
not friends like, with you her can't anymore.
Be, yeah. I guess what I'm saying is the competition friends who are, like, competitive like that are weird. And probably it's coming from you. Most of the time when people say things to you, it has to do with their own issues, not you.
Yeah.
Like, most of the things that irk us about people is not about us at all. She
yeah.
probably doesn't love her Instagram or wishes hers was more
Fine.
Like you or whatever. So it's
But if you're not a friend or a partner, which has also been an issue for me in the past, that, like, can't celebrate other people's successes, that's, like, bye, Felicia.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody has time for that. And, like, you should be the woman, too, who can celebrate other women's successes.
Absolutely.
Or your partner's successes. Like, that is so crucial.
That's something that we have to, I think you learn it. I don't know, maybe I don't know how I always pick that up, but I think as a woman to a man, if you're hearing this and you're getting, you know, you feel like you're being, you have friends that you're feeling competitive with, or mm-hmm. you know, you can flip that, kind of just keep sending love, keep supporting them, and you realize, like, it evaporates, it goes away. It's not
and it can be really motivating. Like, if somebody else can achieve kind of what you want, like, be like, oh, wait, it's achievable. I could do that,
exactly.
too.
Exactly. Like, use it to inspire yeah. you, not to bring you down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so Hannah also, so I want to go back to sex real quick.
Yeah.
We just have to. So on that thing.
Is that something you like to talk about, Emily?
Yeah, I do. Sometimes I like to get to sex. I do. So, okay, so you have this boyfriend now.
I do.
And so you're saying that. Like, I want to talk about real quick, like, is there anything, I don't know what I was going to say here, that you've learned about sex in our last discussion, how you felt. For example, I just think it's a good example about the blowjobs, about mm-hmm. how in the past you might have felt that it was something that was degraded. Like, can we talk about this for a minute?
Yeah, no,
I think it's very relatable.
So I mentioned on Too Much to Handle that I, in the past when I was younger, because of the portrayals that I'd seen women going down on men, giving head to men, like, always looked so degrading. It was
right,
a man
was, like,
forcing
her,
a woman,
choking that's
her.
That's what you saw in porn.
Yeah, right. That's what you've seen. And she's, you know, putting stuff all over her face and everything. And it just seemed so degrading and so disrespectful. So I always thought that giving head was something that was anti-feminist. Right? That it was degrading. That it was something that is not respectful towards a woman. Until I got older and I started to sort of, like, break down that, like, oh, there is a way to do this respectfully, because, like, that we're just not shown that.
Right.
We're not
Absolutely.
Shown, like, a woman being into it. Right.
No. Well, I guess in the porn that you saw growing up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You talked
yeah.
about how you grew up just seeing it, and you're right. And that's such a good.
Yeah. And so you get, like, you get so caught up in that. And then when you have, like, real life experience, because another spoiler alert, porn is not reality
right.
either. but when you get older and you start having real experiences and you love somebody, you want them to have pleasure and you want them to enjoy themselves, and you can find, like, I've found my own enjoyment in doing that.
Yeah.
Now I've made such a switch, because it's like, oh, like, I'm doing something that is giving my partner pleasure, and that is it in itself pleasurable.
Exactly. Then that's what relationships are about, right?
Yeah.
You're sick, you bring them chicken soup. Like, you want to take care of them. And this is a very nurturing thing. And this has made me think, too, because we've been getting, actually, on the Sirius show, we've been getting a lot of calls about And we get this on the show too, women who just don't like it. They don't mm-hmm. like giving blowjobs. And I always say, well, it's probably, is it the taste? Is it whatever? But I hadn't, from your perspective, thought like they actually think it's degrading, mm-hmm. which not in a while have I thought about it. So this is kind of bringing it to mind that I could actually, it's something interesting. I think that there's probably a lot of people listening who are like, huh, I wonder if that's it. And so I hear from a lot of men who are like, why will my partner do this? It might be interesting to take this conversation into your bedroom and ask your partner, like, is there something about blowjobs that you think isn't right for you as anti-feminism yeah. or that you feel like it's yeah. going to be degrading because what you mostly saw, you're right, a lot of porn, if you go to Pornhub, you are going to see him shoving her head down mm-hmm. and choking and coming places that, you know, he has not asked and she has not consented to.
Right.
So I think that's really, I think that is just was very illuminating for me.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I think at least I know a few of my friends who feel the exact same way and who still to this day feel like giving head to them is just something that they think is
check off the list.
Yeah, that's not for them. They won't even do it.
Oh, they won't even
do it. They're just like, this is, if a guy wants me to do this like that, this seems too forceful for them. And I think a lot of that comes from like the context that we have around head.
Exactly. So I think it's so interesting because these same men that they're having sex with probably grew up watching the same porn mm-hmm. where they don't, not only do women think they don't know how to give it, men don't know how to receive. Mm-hmm. So they think for me to receive a blowjob, I got to be shy and she's got to deep throat it. Mm-hmm, I got to mm-hmm. make it aggressive. And so I just think that this is interesting. It's an interesting debate. This could be more oral, you know, who knows? Oral sex movement might explode right now for this.
No pun intended.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll come back with more. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. Here's my question for you, Hannah.
Bring it to me.
Okay, so you talk about women being too much. What do you think about this? Because I often heard this when I was single and dating. And I never believe this. People are like, oh, he's probably just, are guys intimidated by you? Or they're probably really intimidated by your, not just because of the sex thing. I get that. People, I get that. But you probably got that as well. Like, you're, you know, successful and beautiful and smart. And what do you think that's just, do you call BS in that too? That a guy, or maybe a guy is, but he's not your man? Like, what's your position on that?
Yeah, I think a lot of the times that stems from insecurity. And I don't think that has anything to do with the woman, because I think a lot of the times women feel like they may have to play down their smarts or play down their successes for a man, because we're taught that if we're too successful or if we're, you know, too opinionated or too whatever, that that's going to be somehow emasculating.
Right.
And I think a lot of times we do hedge ourselves for men, and the men that you're supposed to be with aren't going to be or aren't going to feel insecure.
Exactly.
But I think when we say like intimidated, that makes women out to be scary, right? And we're not scary. You're not intimidating. He's intimidated.
Exactly.
There's a big difference there. That's a good way
to switch it, because I do hear from women a lot who are single or they're on the dating apps, and they'll call into the show and they'll say, oh, I think it's because I have a really good career and I know what I want and I'm really strong, and men just, they're not into it. And I always say, like, but then you probably just haven't found that man yet, because I think that women have a history of trying to make ourselves smaller and, like, what your podcast, not taking up too much space, and that really want to encourage women just to keep being you, and you are going to find that person. I think it's important for women who are, like, super alpha, like I am and like you are, to also show that, like, I'm also vulnerable. You want to show all of it. So it's okay to have feelings and emotions. You can still be tough and strong and be a woman in the world, but to also show, like, you know, your heart, and it's okay to show what you want. And that's a practice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important for couples to remember, both, you know, women and men and gender non-binary, that when you are in a partnership, wins and successes are team wins and successes. It's not like the other person's success somehow detracts from your own success, right? It's a team win. Like, when you succeed, I succeed.
Exactly.
And we can celebrate that with each other and flourish in that, rather than have it be like a power dynamic or some sort of any competition that comes up.
Yeah, I think that can happen with a lot of couples, the jealousy and the competition. And I feel like, and even in friendships, like, if you could kind of look at it, if I win, you're winning. Like, if you're in a loving relationship to support your partner in their successes and their failures, that's what love is. That's how you have the true intimate relationship. So Hannah, when I saw you last months ago, you didn't have a boyfriend.
I know.
And now you do.
I do.
And I'm so, you seem really happy.
I am very happy.
And I want to say, you met him on an app.
We did. We met on an app. I was on the dating app. I mean, we've talked about this before. We've talked about it on your podcast, the dating app world, and how it can be really, you know, disheartening, you know, because you keep going on these dates and sometimes you go on a lot of bad dates and you get discouraged, and it's hard out there.
I know. So what it is hard out there. So what, first of all, what kept you going, and what have you learned, you know, from the apps? Like, what are some good tips you could share?
I hate this phrase, but it is a numbers game. It is. And I know that sucks to hear, because that means going on a lot of bad dates sometimes. But it is about putting yourself out there. I guess that's a better way to say it, right? Putting yourself out there. And even if you have a bad date, or even if you face rejection or something like that, still going on another date, because there is somebody out there that you are going to click with and have something really special with. It just might take a little bit more time, and maintaining that patience is something that you really have to practice.
Yeah.
So I would say patience, but also efficiency. I think that's a big one, because I think for me, like, I don't want to waste my time, and I don't want to waste somebody else's time. And so figuring out if that person's going to be a good match for you is really important. I asked my current partner on the first date, I was like, are you a feminist? Like, tell me about your thoughts. Like, I want to know your political beliefs, because those are things that matter to me. Now, that doesn't matter for everybody, and that's not a priority for everybody. But we had that discussion. We had the discussion about, like, if we both wanted kids and marriage really early on.
Good.
Really early. Because I don't want to waste his time. I don't want to waste my time. I know what I want out of a partner. I would know what I want out of life. I know where my priorities are. And so being efficient and covering my bases for the things that are really important to me, I think is also a good tip. Because I think a lot of women feel like if they bring up something that's important to them, or if they bring up marriage, or if they bring up kids and expressing that they want those things, they're worried they're going to be perceived as quote unquote crazy or too needy. Mm. The right person for you isn't going to think that.
Exactly.
I've been told I was all of those things in previous relationships, and my partner now is like, no, I don't think that about you. Like, I don't think you're high maintenance or any of those other things that you've heard before. And so that's how you know that it's a good fit.
Mm-hmm. You didn't have to change who you were for a guy to fall in love with you.
Yes.
You were full on Hannah Cranston, and he fell in love with you, all of it.
Yeah.
So I think that that's such a good tip, because why should we mess around? Like, being efficient, if you know you want kids and you know, your religion's important to you, or you work all the time and you're workaholic, but you only have time on the weekend, whatever it is, bring it up as early as you can, because why date someone five times? Like, those are five nights of your life you will never get back. If you could have found on the first date they don't want kids and you do, or there's, you know, but you're out if that's if that's a deal breaker for
you. And knowing yourself, right? Yeah. Knowing yourself, knowing what's important for you, knowing what sort of things that you really want out of a relationship is also really important. And getting in tune with yourself and being confident in yourself, I think, is another really great tip that we forget, because it's all about, like, the other person. Like,
yes.
Do they want to date me? It's like, no, wait, do I want to date them? Exactly. Like, how do I feel in my body and in my brain?
Yeah, like, you're interviewing them as much as, and again, women being pleasers sometimes, we're like, I just want every guy I go out with to really like me, and like, then I'll decide if I like them. I love sports,
and I love hot dogs.
Yeah.
And I'm into casual sex. Like, great if that's you, but don't, like, fake it to make it.
Yeah, I think the more, the more real, the more authentic we are, the more we show our true selves, that's going to get you more what you want a lot quicker. So what about just the act of, and I did some of the apps for a while, and I did get overwhelmed with the messaging and getting back to people. And I mean, did you have like a good hack for that, or a good system for keeping track, or just things that you learned, like what not to do's and don'ts of the apps?
No, I ghosted a lot of people. Sorry, I apologize to all of you out there. It is hard. It's super overwhelming. I think there are some apps that like consolidate the number of matches they give you, and I think that was really helpful for me, because it's like, oh, it'll give you 3 in a day or 10 in a day or whatever it is, and then you're done. So like, it's a little bit,
oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's more efficient, I guess. I guess that's a common theme, and so I think that's really helpful. Or a lot, giving yourself an allotment of time, because you could sit and swipe, I mean, it turns into a game, you could sit and swipe for hours. And so I think, like, giving yourself a boundary for how long you want to be on the app is really important. But honestly, my current boyfriend, when we started talking on the app, he was so engaging with the conversation. Like, he was telling me a lot about himself and what he was doing and asking so many questions. And so for me, I wasn't gonna let the conversation fizzle because it was so engaging.
Right. You ghost on the guys who are like, what's up?
Yeah.
You know, you're like, we match, but give me something here.
Yeah. Like, how are you doing? Oh, I'm really hungover. Okay. Like, cool. Yeah. Like, ask me something or tell me something a little bit more that I can work off. Like, I'm pretty good at talking to people. It's out of my job.
Hannah's a good talker. Hannah's a good talker that, you want to engage. Yeah. I think that that is all. If you're single too, I feel like a lot of people are like, well, I'm never doing the apps, or I'm never doing, it's like, if you really want to find someone and you're not on the apps and you're not trying different things that you say you'll never do, you're probably not going to find someone. I think if you're single, and you don't have to do the apps then, but just do something, make a step every day towards finding someone. It's like you're looking for a job. Tell everybody you know that you're single. Like, let your friends know. Let your people you run into at a party. Do you know anyone? You know, it's like, make it part of, you know, do something different. Say yes to those weird Facebook invites that you get from people that you don't really know.
Right.
But you might meet someone. Like, there are single people everywhere.
You have to work at love and getting a relationship and maintaining a relationship just like you would work at anything. It's like going to the gym. It's like going to work. It is about putting in the time and effort. And I think so many people are so, especially when it comes to dating apps, and especially when it comes to older people, they're so concerned with the story that they're going to tell, right? Like, nobody wants to say, like, oh, we met on a dating app. Like, oh, we'll come up with, like, oh, we met at Whole Foods or something. Oh, we met at a bar. We met, you know, whatever it is. And I'll tell you, like, I was sort of in that camp. Like, I was like, oh, I don't really want to meet a partner on a dating app. And now, once I found somebody who I love and I cherish, I'm like, I don't give an F. Like, I met him at the dumpster. I don't care.
It does not matter
because it, at the end of the day, it matters who you find, wherever you found them.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like that. And I do feel like that stigma is gone a little bit. I mean, because we're all doing it. Well, I'm happy that you found love and he doesn't think that you're too much to handle, because you're not too much to handle.
And nobody's too much to handle.
No, we're not. I think that women are, you know, what would even the equivalent be of a guy being too much to handle? Does that even exist in the world that you're like, oh,
So we did this pod, we did this episode on my podcast about women who are called crazy. And it was really interesting because red flags that are what men consider to be red flags for a woman to be crazy are like, oh, she cries over stupid things. She talks about kids. You know, she's too emotional, whatever it may be. Right. And then what women consider red flags for men to be crazy are like, oh, he tried to strangle me in my sleep. He said he was going to rape me. That like it was completely, completely opposite. So it was these extremes where men are calling women crazy because we're acting women. Like a human. Yeah. Right. And then when we use that term for men, it's because he's they might actually be mentally deranged. Wow. Yeah. Isn't yeah. That, it's right. super interesting.
That's interesting and then kind of disturbing. And so yeah. I love that you talk about, I feel like every guy you ever talk to, would you say, so why'd you guys break up? He'll say, she was crazy.
Yeah.
I'm like, that drives me crazy. You said they're crazy. Can you put a little more texture to that? That's not even interesting. Like, I'm like, oh, wait. And I'll even say, now, wait, let me guess. Was she crazy?
Yeah.
And like, oh, well, you know, I mean, I just feel like it's a cop out, too.
It is. It's a total cop out because it's a lot easier to say, like, she was crazy versus, oh, she had legitimate concerns about my communication skills and I was unable to deliver.
Right.
Like, that's a little bit harder. It's a little, you know, wordier.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But I would love everyone, men, and not saying only men, women do it too. But yes. I think we all could learn to communicate around all these things. I think we learned so much from every single relationship. Even if we got out of them, I think it's nothing to be ashamed of. And I think it's good to understand why a relationship ended and then have an articulate story about that. If I'm going out with a guy and he says, oh, my ex, she was crazy, I get concerned. I'm like, well, what really happened? So I think to have your, you know, some people break up and they don't take their part in it because it's 50-50. There's two in every, you know, even if your partner did something, not if he strangled you in the middle of the night, like that's deranged.
Yeah.
But usually you're with someone, you know, it takes two to tango. So we all have our part in it. So I just think it's, you know, better to talk more intelligently about your why things ended and, you know.
Yeah, you learn so much about what you want in a future partner, but you also learn about yourself. And I think taking the time to figure out, okay, how can I be a better partner and how can I be my best self within a relationship is really important reflection to, you know, take the time to do as well.
Absolutely, Hannah. We're not too much.
Never. Too much. Nobody's too much.
Hannah Cranston, I have to ask you before you go, I have five quickie questions for you.
Let's do it.
That we ask all of our listeners.
Let's have a quickie.
Okay. Hannah Cranston, what's your biggest turn on?
Humor.
Biggest deal breaker?
Cat person.
Ideal first date. Your ideal first date.
Something like an arcade, like something interactive. Ooh, and competitive.
Fun. Sexiest body part to you?
Forearms.
Ooh, number one dating tip.
Be honest.
Oh, I love this. Hannah Cranston, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having
me. I'm so excited. How can people find you?
People can find me on my new podcast, Too Much to Handle, on iTunes and anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. They can also find me on Instagram and Twitter at Hannah Cranston and on Facebook at Hannah Cranston Host.
Thanks for being here. Another fun conversation with Hannah Cranston. Okay, guys, we are on to your emails. You know how much I love answering your questions. So if you want a question answered on the show, go to sexwithemily.com, click the Ask Emily tab, fill out the short form, check a yes if you'd like to be called. Or email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com, and please, please, please include your name, your age, where you live, and how you listen to the show. Thanks, guys. Okay, Jamie's here with me, and she's going to read the emails.
All right, this one is from Aaron, who's 27 in Maryland. He writes, hi, Emily. First off, love your show. I've been sharing the podcast with my friends. Out of general curiosity, I wanted to get your take off of something one of my friends said when the topic of sex came up. She had said that she has hooked up with a guy many times, but by her definition, that did not include vaginal sex. Her reasoning behind this was, you don't fuck guys you like, and when you finally have sex, the men have all the power. My initial response in conversation was to be careful with that line of thinking, as leading the guy on for too long may lead him to moving on and just not bothering with the whole waiting game. Later, when I got home, I was thinking about it more in depth, about how in my mind, sex shouldn't be thought as a power struggle between two individuals, rather a time where both people can come together. It's not often I hear this perspective from women. I'm just curious if this is something a lot of women think about when it comes to sex with someone they like. Thanks.
All right. This is a really interesting question, Aaron, and I really like it because it really got me to think. And I was like, okay, huh, it's a great point, because the fact that she says, you know, you don't sleep with the guys you like, and when you've sex, men have all the power, is actually, I've heard that a lot from women, you know, I guess women of all ages, but especially I feel like it's younger women who feel that the second they give it up, that then guys are in control and they can decide if they get to sleep with them or dump them or move on, and that you give up your power. So yes, I believe that women do think that way, but I hope that many people are listening to this show realize that that is just a really not helpful way to think about sex. And then your response, though, was, well, leading the guy on for too long may lead him to moving on. And so why are you playing? So it's all about game playing is what we're talking about here, because I also think that women worry, well, I want to wait longer, but what if he leaves me? And then some women sleep with guys too quickly because they're afraid the guy won't like them. And so the whole challenge here is what our beliefs around sex is, that we have to play some kind of game with someone and not really lead with our true hearts and minds and feelings about what actually feels right in the moment with each partner. We all have different views on sex. So I think that her way of thinking is common, but I'm hoping is becoming, will become outdated with, you know, realizing that men and women have equal power, that sex should not be seen as a power struggle, and that we should sleep with people that we want to sleep with. And that we should sleep with people that we feel safe with. I mean, I always say I'm never going to give you a number like wait 3 dates, wait 3 months. But what I will tell you is that it's best to wait to sleep with someone until you feel like you can trust them and that you know them well enough to feel like this is a good decision. So I think when sex goes wrong is when we play games like, oh, I have to wait 3 months because, you know, if I do this, then this. That doesn't work. We never know how anyone else is thinking in a relationship. We don't, everyone's different. Like, I think that when we're true to ourselves and we have honest and open communication with someone, which is what, you know, I'm all about, that if you're in a situation with someone and you're like, oh, I want to sleep with them, but I'm not going to because it, or you're thinking that they're waiting too long, talk about these things. You can say, I'm not comfortable. What she could rather say with the guy, your friend, for example, if she's dating someone and she likes a guy, she could just wait and see, like, you know what? I'm going to wait on the sex. I'm not feeling like, you know, this is something I want to have sex with someone that I feel like I have a connection with, like a real connection, and I'm just not ready for it yet. Like, I think that the more that we're really honest with people and take out all the game playing, that you're going to easily be able to weed out the people that you actually want to be with, because not everybody believes in playing these games. Like I said, it's common that women believe this way. I talk to young women. I have a friend's daughter who's 19, and she's always like, oh yeah, guys have the power. I'm like, no, you don't realize that we all have power. And I think, again, antiquated way of thinking. I remember thinking in college too, if I sleep with a guy, he's going to think that he got something from me and then he's in charge. That is a familiar way of thinking, but I think, again, it's antiquated, and it's, I know that it's, you know, not a true way of thinking. So I think that if I could impart anything to everyone, is that make decisions on your own and have honest communication before you sleep with someone. And I can also tell you that for women, a lot of women, that feeling that you're with a partner that you can trust, and when you feel safe is when you have the best, most pleasurable, most connected sex, which is what I think we all want. Cool. Thank you, Aaron. Okay.
This one is from Sarah, who's 26 in Idaho. She writes, hi, Emily. My boyfriend and I have been dating for about a year and a half, and recently our sex life has been almost non-existent. He's voiced his frustration with this a few times, as he even said that his confidence has taken a hit because I constantly turn him down for sex. The truth is, I've become extremely resentful towards him for not prioritizing my pleasure. A session usually lasts between 3 to 5 minutes in one position with very little foreplay. I attempted to explain that I need more foreplay in order to feel turned on, but the most I get is a couple minutes of him going down on me, which feels forced and rushed. He did buy me a vibrator, but then said the sensation was uncomfortable for him when we use it during sex, so he expects me to use it on myself afterwards while he lays next to me. Not sexy. I don't know how to bring up these issues in a way that it won't upset or hurt him. We have a great relationship otherwise, but at this point, I feel absolutely no sexual attraction towards him. Please help.
Okay, Sarah, I totally get this. So here is the deal. Again, there's also a lot going on here. Remember this, Sarah, that you're both coming into this and you both need to learn together, as in every sexual relationship. Like I say, great lovers are born, they are not made. And so there's always a little bit of teaching in every relationship and learning and paying attention to what each other's want. So I feel like you both want the same thing. You both want to have great sex. And I believe that he's doing the best he can right now with what he knows. So even though you've told him that you need foreplay, I'm going to guess that he probably doesn't really get what that means yet. So it's going to take a little bit more of explaining. Like, he thinks, you know, for some guys, like, yeah, you put your hand on my penis for 5 minutes, I'm ready to go. But for women, you know, I say, like, if a guy goes down on me for 3 minutes, like, you might as well have, like, just got to fill my car up with gas or gotten me a sandwich or something. It's way more useful than 3 minutes of oral. Like, we haven't even started the party yet. I think, and also buying you a vibrator shows me that he's actually interested in your pleasure. But yet to say that it doesn't feel great during sex is because that's another thing, is that sometimes vibrators don't feel great on the settings that women like. So maybe you can use it during sex, but make sure that it's either further away from his penis, so your hand's kind of covering it as it's on your clitoris if you're using a higher setting, or turn the setting down a little bit lower. So it could just be that one time you used it. That's happened to me before, where I'm like, oh, like it can kind of startle men, or like you just got to kind of play with it. So I think there's a little dance going on here, and you both have to just kind of have more talking about the fact that, you know, that foreplay to you, you appreciate, you know, this is a conversation you have outside the bedroom. And in a not judgmental way, in an open, not shaming, not blaming, and just saying, I appreciate that, you know, you've made these efforts around, you know, I know we've talked about foreplay. I know I so appreciate you bought me a vibrator. And let me explain some things to you that for me to get warmed up, sweetie, I really need, like, I want to kiss and make out and have you go down on me for like a while and take some time taking our clothes off. And important, to get you warmed up, I suggest using the vibrator beforehand. Like, she comes first, right? So maybe when you're using the vibe beforehand to get warmed up, then you'll be ready to get going into sex. And that could also count as some of the foreplay. So you can let him know you're liking that it's starting to make some changes, but you can't orgasm from penetration alone. And that's the other thing that men, you know, they need to learn that. Like, this is something that, you guys know, I've been saying it for almost 15 years, but every single day there's someone who hears this information and they're shocked that only 20% of women actually have orgasms during intercourse. So, and of those women, not every time. So it just sounds like it has to be a little bit of like slowing down, really thoughtful, honest conversations where you guys are working on it together. So it's not a he said, she said, but together you're like looking forward to the next time you have sex, because he's now getting what you want and he's not going to feel like, you know, rejected anymore. And you can let him know that the reason you're turning him down is you never want to make him feel that you're not into him, but you're not getting your needs met. And again, as much as you can affirm him, because when we feel on the defensive, we get attack mode. If someone we ever feel bad, and he's even going to feel inferior right now, because he's not going to realize that he actually possibly couldn't know this at this point, because, you know, no one's teaching this in school. If he's not listening to the podcast, and I suggest you guys probably listen to the podcast together. That would be great. A lot of couples do, and it's life-changing. So again, there's just education, information, and keep talking about it. And this goes for everybody in a relationship. Having the conversation once or even twice isn't going to cut it. It's ongoing. It's checking in. How did it go? Did it feel better last time? I mean, I think that people believe that talking about sex takes all the thrill out of it, but I think it becomes fun, like talking about sports. So yeah, babe, when you went down to me, it felt amazing and I was really close. And then next time, blah, blah, and it becomes hot. It doesn't have to be in bed. Maybe the next morning you're talking about it. And then you guys, if you are both willing to really work on this and all the things you're talking about here, Sarah, I think that you can get there, that you guys are having great sex. If you can get past him feeling defensive and upset and really listening, and then you kind of having some patience around it, who knows what could happen? The possibilities here are endless. So thanks for your email, Sarah, and have some good talk. Communication is a lubrication. All right, everyone, hope you enjoy the show. Love having our returning guest, Hannah Cranston, on the show. Thanks for your emails and just everyone for supporting the show. And to my amazing team, Ken, Sarah, producer Jamie, and Michael. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.